With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This is the Anfield Drop in association with RedsBet, a betting company with a difference. 50% of their profits goes to fan and community causes. If gambling isn't your thing, that's fine. It's not mine. But if you do fancy a bet, give them a look. And as always, be gamble aware. We've got Mike Nevin, Dan Morgan, Rob Gutman, Andy Heaton, Fuad Hassan, and I'm Melissa Reddy. And it still feels like it's ages away, but you can see that it's creeping closer in terms of how many flags and stuff are on the city, Rob Gutman.
You can, and it reminds me of my semi-adolescence in Liverpool. In the 80s, I came here to Liverpool to live when I was 18, and I was struck by the minute Liverpool were doing bits, there were flags everywhere, just hanging out of shop windows, out of flat windows, out on cars. It was just a great... It was almost the day after a semi-final win, you knew that the build would happen. And I remember going down Church Street in the 80s and WH Smith's would suddenly have the stands outside with loads and loads of flags and banners. And this feels like not the first time. There's been smatterings of it down the last decade or so when Liverpool have reached latter stages of things. But this feels bigger. We were just talking off air about how most of the main arterial roads in Liverpool have now have pop-up shops with flags and banner shops, just ruthless stuff. It's like Bomby Nights, but for LFC, and it's been brilliant to see.
If you're living under a rock, we are actually talking about the Champions League final against Tottenham on the 1st of June in Madrid, which is probably what we've all been talking about forever, because this build-up has been so long. Andy, it does feel, like Rob said, different this time around. Last year, houses were decorated and stuff for Kiev, but it felt like it was only 3, 4, 5 days before the game, perhaps. But I think because the league season ended a while ago and there's been this gap, we've seen the decorations up for a lot longer. It feels more, not just drawn out, but there's more intensity to it.
I think there's an imperiousness this season that wasn't there last year. I think, you know, we got to the final in Kiev last year on like this mad brand of football and like on a wing and a prayer, and it was all or nothing. Whereas this season, it just feels like it feels almost like natural. Like Liverpool are this giant. You get the feeling that fans are trying to. I'm trying to hypothesise that the fans are trying to play their part in this, and it's like a generational thing. So like my dad in 1981 went to Paris and looked at photographs, and you know it was almost the same. Like there's housing Kirby and all the flags and banners out there. And I don't think it's any coincidence that the flags are mainly of a retro style, you know, and the basic, the better and all that kind of thing. And it's trying to get into the mindset of that. And I think in a way it's almost, I won't say therapeutic, but it's helped build the atmosphere a little bit. And there's like a surety to Liverpool this season that maybe there wasn't last year. That, and you know, it's great and it's just fun. It's boss, isn't it? And it also, puts paid to the myth about no Liverpool, you know, there's no Liverpool fans in Liverpool. I mean, even Kelsey Rose's got Liverpool flags flying everywhere.
I think that's part of it, Andy, isn't it? It's like it's your real chance to sort of put one over the Blue Noses, because when you see that amount of red around the city, it gives light to the idea that, you know, that they're the people's club. I mean, we all know that anyway, but you've got visual representation of that now. I mean, down our road, like the people opposite us, I didn't even know there were Liverpool fans. There's a flag out there, you know, sort of hanging out their window. And I thought, well, I'll go and introduce myself to the fella.
Did you?
Had a conversation. Yeah, had a conversation with him and thought to myself, you know what, I'm a man, far more of a red than you. Better get me flag out. And that's exactly what I did. And I put my red and white checkered flag that I took to Istanbul. It dates back to Rome in 77. It's not mine. It's one that I managed to pick up from somewhere. So that's got all the history, so I thought that'll show you.
Apparently, the real branch of JJB is doing a roaring trade in Spurs flags.
I bet it is, yeah. But I mean, I think a European Cup final is unique. It's the one that gets everybody going. It's more than any FA Cup final. I suppose years gone by, the only other time that you might have said there was competition was when the two Merseyside clubs were playing in cup finals, but this is just about Liverpool, and that's what makes it really special.
What did that actually look like?
Weird.
Because if you've got all these competing flags and banners,
a general election, basically. Yeah, it was better because there was every house had something. But I think you who said the fact there's been this drawn out gap has been significant, and I think it's going to build and build now. We're still a full week away. I drove past Queen's Drive, the Walton Allerton bit of it. And this one had a fairly big house, but it had really gone for it with the amount of banners. I thought, this is like Christmas.
I was just about to say,
people are really one-upmanshipping.
It's like Seaforth and Bootle at Christmas time, and like all the houses are trying to outdo each other.
Yeah.
It's an extension of that in a football sense.
Kirby is the capital of the UK for Christmas lights. It's absolutely bananas, honestly, like growing up there. It's one-upmanship. If there was only like a few lights on each house, they'll all have a few lights. But as soon as someone gets a reindeer outside, someone's going to have two reindeers. And there is that element to it. And it's just dead funny because you see them in blocks.
Yeah.
So you see roads that haven't bothered at all because no one's bothered. And then as soon as one person in one street kicks off, it all goes up.
I tell you what I found funny this week was that, again, down our road, a fella that I've never spoken to me. Two before, he just comes up to me, he said, "You going, lad? You going?" And I said, yeah. And he was asking me about, like, you know, whether I had a ticket, how I was getting there and that. And then I thought, how does he know I'm a Liverpool fan? Because and then I realised it's probably, there's that been that many times that I've come home drunk after Liverpool games, singing my head off, and everyone's saying, "Oh, there's that bloody knobhead down the road." But I've stamped my card, haven't I?
Just not to try and take over the show, Mel, I do apologise. One thing has been noticeable over the last couple of weeks, the conversation with taxi drivers has steered well away from football.
It's off limits, isn't it? You can't talk about it.
Why is that?
I've had that funny, they're
normally so keen.
15 years, we end up talking about cycling.
So like the stereotypes and everyone goes, oh yeah, all cab drivers are Evertonians, but back me up on this.
Absolutely true, 80%.
The people's cab.
Kev's cab. Has it felt like Christmas for you yet, with all the banners and stuff?
Well, I've really enjoyed the break to the game. I know a lot of people have been, can we just play it the days afterwards? But every day I wake up and think, we're in the European Cup final. And you know, in a week or so time, that won't be a thing. It factually won't be a thing. You know, you're gonna wake up and it's gonna be closed season. And every day you wake up with the possibilities of not only going, but you know, just the anticipation of it. And I love it. I mean, I've been trying to put my finger on why this year feels different to last, and it does in many ways. And I think, listen, I loved Kiev in the Ukraine. I thought it was great when I was over there. I thought it was brilliant, but the fact of having to go there for the European Cup final, I think it did take a little bit of a shine off it. It almost felt a little bit like it was, you were going for a different competition in many ways. It just, it felt a bit strange and a bit disengaged. And now, like, you know, even yesterday, when I was looking at my ticket and stuff, I was thinking, God, you know, it just has the feel of a European Cup final because it's in a major European city and stuff like that. And just on the theme of everyone else, I mean, I travel to work on a road at the back of County Road every day, and I go through this road, and there's actually in one of them houses a good flag that you see at the game. I think it's the Travelling Around Europe with Jürgen's Reds one, and that's out the window, and I look at it every morning and get butterflies and the hair stand up on the back of my neck, and I'm thinking, I'm great. This final could be played in August for me. I'm happy with this every day. This feeling of anticipation, I'll take it, because like you say, we get to wake up every morning in the European Cup final, others don't, so I'm loving it.
And you know, not to tempt it, but you know the beauty of it, if Liverpool get the result, those flags are staying up all fucking summer.
Yeah,
absolutely. Fuad, I think since you're the youngest, we should probably like dress you up as a flag and stuff, just decorate Fuad as though he's a house. You up for that?
Stand outside the office. And, No, I agree with what everyone said, really. It's been a bit funny because I've been putting together this video for kind of the road to Madrid and all the home games and away games that we've been on. And it's funny because we've been through so much that you look back and you forget moments that were so great at the time. You know, PSG at home, that feels like an age ago. And what a let off that was when we get the winner last minute. And, you know, I think there's something special with how it's sort of a kind of a culmination of an entire campaign of ups and downs. And then you kind of have this big final to look forward to. And the period you get to reflect is quite interesting because, you know, I guess when you have the league season as well, that kind of takes your mind off it. and you know, you're back midweek playing, and then your focus shifts again, and it's sort of something that kind of it hurts at times, and it's strenuous, but now you can kind of just relax and look back and reflect, and you know, the flags and everything really helps kind of just get you in the mood, and you can't stop thinking about it. I think that's the main thing.
Whenever Fuad speaks, I always get this thing of, why do we actually let anyone else speak? Just let him speak.
It's like chocolate, isn't it?
I know, his voice is absolutely amazing.
Thanks, Mel.
Has anyone actually looked at the temperature for Madrid 30, next week?
Yes, it is 33 degrees on the Saturday, I think.
People are going to be using those flags to wipe themselves.
All day, I think it's about 27 by 9 o'clock or something. Something mad, even in the evening. This is for the first time on warm weather training might actually be of some significant use.
I'm absolutely fine with it being that hot, by the way.
Yeah, I love it.
What if you're taking your scarf?
No problem.
I mean, imagine standing around that park with a scarf on. That's going to be...
Fair bad, mate. You're underestimating this. There'll be lads north, head to toe in North Face over there. 100%. Guarantee. Big Pyrenex coats. Fair colours, Pyrenex.
Our fan culture is mainly based around flags, though, isn't it? Flags and banners. Yeah. We've had that like continental feel to our...
The simpler, the better, by the way,
basically,
Mike.
I mean, you know, we go mad about all the clubs robbing our songs, but effectively, Liverpool's fan culture is taken from Europe. It, you know, that's the way culture evolves, isn't it? That, you know, it's influenced by things that in and around you. And I think Liverpool is the nation's most continental club. There's no doubt about it. I think that's why the whole European Cup narrative fits the club and the city so well, because it's an expression of something that's been going on for over 30 years. I mean, even in the mid-80s, like the European games, the flag nights that they called, I mean, most of the flags were of foreign clubs. Like, there was a massive Roma flag throughout 84, 85. Mm. We've got that different feel about us, and I just think that's why. And I don't know whether it's passed down verbally to a new generations, but it just seems almost by osmosis to have carried through, and that's why we're different.
I think it's
the culture of the city as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can get really sociological about this, but I mean, my earliest memories of going on the Kop and coming to Anfield was of seeing Rangers and Celtic flags. And that tells you everything. That tells you that there is this sort of this cultural melting pot element to it. And I think the minute Europe was on offer, and the fact that there's some sort of hint of a free holiday, not free holiday, exactly, but an opportunity, I suspect, for lads to get away from their domestic situations for a few days. They did, and they came back with their boots filled.
Exactly. Ingenuity was the watchword, I think, wasn't it?
Yes.
And appropriation.
Literally and culturally.
What struck me is the comments post-Barca again. And look, everyone likes to think that their own club is special and unique, and everyone likes to think they've got the best fans. I'm not saying we're the best. I'm just saying there is a uniqueness, and that's been proven again since the Barcelona game, the comments coming out. And just purely how many times the word Anfield has been mentioned, not by us, by the opposition.
Mm.
And you go right through the annals of history. There's teams like Barcelona now coming to Anfield going with 3-0 up, but shit, it's Anfield. And that means something.
Yeah.
That means something. We had it with, I always remember when we went to Madrid with you, Rob, if you remember.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was the marker carried the famous front page of next week, Anfield, so what? And then the game after, they had the tails between the legs, Inter Milan, I think it was maybe even the same season. Couldn't face it. Chelsea, how many times now? It is there, and it is, and I think Mike's far more eloquent than me about it. It is, I think it's, Liverpool's such an outward looking city as well. And I do think there is that woven into it, there's a little bit of fuck you about it to everyone else, if we're being totally honest.
Yeah.
I think Anfield has become more Anfield-y, though. In modern, if you think Anfield is more of a fortress today, I'm going to say, than I think it was in the golden age where we were the best, in a certain sense, in that we've had, I would now say...
It's become a parody of itself, but in a good way.
Well, yeah, the myth has grown and grown. Yeah, and there are certain nights where we've started to do impossible things. Like Dortmund was an impossible thing. Olympiakos was...
That was another one, sorry. Yeah,
Olympiakos was impossible. What we did to Roma was ridiculous. What we did to Man City, those were the kind of performances which in the golden age we didn't have to have so much, and we didn't have. And I think it's now a thing that you've been Anfielded. Barcelona were Anfielded. And I don't think anyone who comes there goes, we hear about tales about going to Turkey and, it's a cauldron, that venue, or go to the old...
Al Samayen Stadium.
Yeah, and you go, those are tough places to go. But top pros go, yes, it's fine. What we do, you go there, you quiet in the crowd, calm the game down, and then you win. No one can do that to Anfield, really. Okay, one or two do, but it's very, very hard to do it. I'm not sure why we're talking about Anfield when we're not going to, but we're playing in Madrid.
But fan culture is a big part of it. And Mike, you made the point that Liverpool is the most continental sort of influenced city. And that's true because you can actually see it and how other clubs have celebrated the fact that Liverpool are in another European Cup final. Borussia Mönchengladbach had Ale, 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 Jamie Webster's version playing at their stadium at halftime. What? I think it was like last week or the week before or something. I sent it because my friend was at the game, sent me the recording. I sent it to him and he's like, you know what? This is actually mental because you're the second person to send me this. You've sent me an audio file. Somebody sent me a video of the stadium going mad to my version of the song. You had Borussia Dortmund, but obviously they've also got the Jurgen Klopp connection. But I've seen so many teams, like even from really obscure leagues, celebrating the fact that Liverpool are in the final again. And I think that's part of it, that Liverpool are so open to going to different cities and, you know, adopting the culture and being a part of it all. But I did a feature not so long ago for The Athletic talking about Liverpool's European rebirth under Jurgen Klopp. I'm really happy we've mentioned the fan culture element because I think it's been intertwined. It's that revitalization of the fan base has coincided with this upturn on the pitch, and I think it's mutually beneficial. And Webster was one of the people I've spoken to about it. But, you know, we think about the boss night, Shevchenko Park. If anyone was in Kiev last season, were you there, Dan?
Yeah, just talking to you, Melon.
Oh, yeah. So much. Because I've not experienced a game as a fan, I've always got to work it. That was the first, Kiev was the first experience I had as a supporter to just go and see what it's like. And I was so blown away by everything.
It was magical, Shevchenko Park. I mean, I remember my most vivid memory about Kiev was just thinking to myself, in no other situation would I be here. And that was, I mean, I thought it had tons of character. I thought the people were lovely. I thought they couldn't do enough for you in the main. And then you kind of go there and you go through your logistics of why you're there and you're getting towards the game. And then you sort of walk towards this park where even streets away you could hear these echoes of noise of Liverpool, and you just started to feel a little bit homely, a little bit of nostalgia. And then you get in this park and it's a sea of red and you literally could be anywhere in the world, and it just reminded you why you were there. And it just had this hazy, like, paro-filled scent to the air, and it's really difficult to explain if you wasn't there. And I know some fans take exceptionalism by saying, oh, you know, you just had a nice time, but you didn't win anything and all that. And I think that's important to reference when we talk about fan culture, because I think Mike makes a really good point before when he says that, you know, some people look at us and think that we look outward more than they do. Well, I think we do, because we get irked so much because we make the effort to go out to Europe and seek these cultures and bring them back to Liverpool, and then we kind of see it getting ripped off by a soccer AM culture of fan base that, you know, sing about austerity in Liverpool like it's the 1980s still and stuff like that. And it's just lazy. And it's almost why Liverpool need to be in Europe for me, is that they get those experiences themselves, but they also bring them back here and let everyone else see what we've learned ourselves. And another thing I want to touch on is I think what's coincided with Jürgen and his reign is that we've seen almost an exuberance of youth amongst the support adopting to it, and it's been exemplified by the Champions League season for me this year. I've had a couple of the Spine Cop kids by me, and they're only 17, and they only turn up for the European nights, and they stand by me, and we've got a really good relationship built. And the last half an hour in Barcelona was just me managing them through the game. Honestly, they were crying their eyes out. And I've got my arms around both, and I'm saying, it's all right, this is what we need to do to get through. And I'm saying, we'll score five. If they score one, don't worry, I'm giving them all this. And because the occasion just completely overawed them. But I think the effervescence we're seeing in the stadium and these young lads and girls who are buying into Liverpool and what it is today, is I think it's kind of knocking years off all of us in a way, and it's making us kind of collectively become a little bit more young and at heart and younger at adopting the club and what it is today. So just that as well is a big thing for me.
I think the boss night thing is and it's an incredible expression of Liverpool culture. I mean, it's completely Scouse, and I know like people from outside Liverpool have latched onto it now, and that's, you know, that's good. It's natural,
but the buying into it in the right way
because it's attractive and it's unique and it's very, very Liverpool, and people want to buy into that idea. But equally, it's given a lot of the, like, the ticketless Liverpool local generation a chance to express their love of the club.
Yes, yeah.
You know, not all of them go to the match regularly. As Dan said, a lot of them just European games, because there's been accessibility in the past that it's been allowed by that. And I think basically that influx of local young fans has definitely it's given the likes of me a leg up, if you like. Because it gives me the chance to pontificate to younger people, but at the same time, it's boss, because it keeps you young and it keeps you in touch. I mean, with songs, like, people talk about, oh, they sing that too often. LA, LA, LA is the best football song that I've heard in 50 years.
I prefer Si Senor. Do you like Si Senor? I love Si Senor. I do.
But in terms of, that's about one player. I'm all about team and stuff like that. And I just think, and the fact that, I mean, for me, like, Paris down to Turkey, it's got massive resonance with me, because my first European Cup final, I was 13 in Paris, didn't have a ticket, didn't get in. It's a horrible feeling when you're in a city and you can't go to the game. Down to Turkey, I was in Istanbul 20 years after Heysel, so, you know, it's got a personal reference for me, but it's just a brilliant song.
You said the word osmosis before, and that struck a chord with me. And Robin, yourself and Robin know far more, but there is a Footsteps of Our Fathers kind of thing going on lately, and I think a lot of a part of that is because, for the first time in ages, I think as well, the club is so united with the fan base. And look, it'll never ever be perfect, but if you look at where it was not so long ago, especially with the ticket walkout, even under Fenway Sports Group, you know, it is a lot closer. And there is that Shevchenko Park last year as well. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the things about it, there is a sense of wonder and adventure, because you're thinking, I'll never be here again in my lifetime, in all probability.
Yeah.
You know, and then you walk up to Shevchenko Park, and it's the way the city's built. It's like on it, like it's almost like a grid system, and you're walking up, and you can like hear it as a whisper, and then a whisper becomes a hum. But you feel that you actually feel the resonance, but rather than hearing it, you feel it. It's like a bass thing. I can only describe it as like similar to the first time I went to New York, and you can feel the intensity of the city, and you're exactly right. And it just felt this massive, and it felt like we'd arrived somewhere, and. Look, hindsight's 2020, but I did say this straight in the aftermath of Kiev. The reason why I think it was heartbreaking, but it was nowhere near as bad as what it could have been, because I think I said at the time on the show, but you think it didn't feel like the end of something. It felt like the start of something. And this just feels like the next step. And as much as the club have ramped it up, the fact we, as a fan base, we've seen that and gone with it as well. And it just seems like everyone's just bought into this ideal. And it's an ideal that hasn't been there since 2005, maybe, and long may it continue.
Shevchenko Park was so important because, having known people who went to the game, who worked the game, who didn't have the Liverpool fans working, you know, for the club and stuff, who didn't have the opportunity to go to Shevchenko Park because they had to be at the stadium early, and fans who didn't travel at all to Kiev. And Rob, you could probably, you know, come in after I've said what I've said to give the other perspective. People who were there, the happiness that filled the place, and Andy's point about you knew it was the start of something. It when you were there, you could feel that this was a celebration, not a celebration linked to the game, to the match that was taking place, a celebration of Liverpool's journey under Jürgen so far, and where everyone foresaw that going. In the stadium itself, it was quite devastating, the way the game panned. But all the people that were at Shevchenko Park were still so defiant. It was like, didn't go our way, but we'll be back. It was that there were defiance is the only word I can find it. And when I saw my friends afterwards who hadn't had the experience I just had, I was still happy. I was still like, it felt like I was walking on a cloud still. Of course, I was disappointed that Liverpool lost the game, but my eyes had been open to, if this continues, the fans and the players all pulling in the same direction, it's going to be fantastic. But when I saw all my mates afterwards, they were on the floor. They were they were like dead. They were absolutely gone. Was it the same for you, Rob?
Yeah, I was devastated because I couldn't go because I couldn't get my youngest Raphael out of school to come with me. He's here listening to this now. So we couldn't go. So we, you know, we made as big a deal as you can watching on a big telly with lots of friends and family, and it was as nice as an environment as it could be, but there wasn't all that. I think in the weeks before the final, I felt that restoration of pride. I felt whatever. I didn't expect us to beat Real Madrid. I thought we could. I thought our name was on it. I thought we could, but I didn't expect it. So therefore, I was always looking past it in a certain sense. I'm thinking, well, we are the coming force here. We will. There will be more to come next season. But on the day, when it came to on the day, I badly wanted Liverpool to finish that day with the European Cup. And the way it unravelled was, because because we didn't have Shevchenko apart, we were just alone with the story that unfolded on our screens. And the story was a nightmare. It was a football, and you could not have a game which just goes against you. And a nightmare not in the sense that you get outplayed and beaten 4-0 kind of nightmare. In a way, you can dust yourself down and go, that's fine. You know, we'll put in our place. But that was cruel, the manner of that. And I didn't get up again until I found we were signing Fabinho.
48 hours
later, that lifted me off the floor.
It's interesting that, though, because I think I remember it. I mean, I think there's something really humbling in just being at a game and watching it live. Whereas if you're watching it on a screen and it's from somewhere halfway around the world, it takes on this extra gravitas. And for me, just watching the game, I've never watched it back because I don't want to. I don't see the need to.
Me neither.
I could have been watching a Sunday league game where I watched the keeper throw it at a lad and it went in the back of the net. And it almost made it a little bit more human in a way. But I remember, I mean, I was next to Neil in the game, and Neil's told the story before and got no shame in it. He was absolutely crestfallen at the final whistle. He was in tears.
Yeah, I was.
And I was really defiant. But I remember my thought first and foremost was saying to him, they're our boys, they're us, they're a representation of us, they've done us more than proud this season. They've beaten Manchester City, you know, they've fought through for something that we didn't expect. They're a credit to us, so we make sure we're there for them now, because obviously they've been more than enough for us. And I remember saying to him, we'll be back, and I knew we would be, and knew that it was only the start. And that feeling was crazy, because I just couldn't feel upset. I couldn't feel on the floor with it.
Do you think that the final there's two things here. The Kiev last year, you know, the Karius thing, and you mentioned the Fabinho thing, and what a replacement we've signed as a goalie. But talking about the game itself, and I know it's at Atletico's new stadium, but do you think there's an element with it being in Madrid? There's almost like, even though they're not involved, there's almost like a score to settle element to this.
I think there is. I mean, I'm sort of quite... excited. I mean, aside from the game itself, I'm quite excited about us really showing off to the Madrid people, you know, because they're a cultural centre, they're a football centre, aren't they? And I think we, for the first time, we get to illustrate to them just how massive we are, because the Spaniards don't really travel in the same numbers as us anyway. There was plenty of them in Kiev, by the way, but nonetheless... This is a chance to ram down the throats of Real Madrid fans who live in that city. How many we are, basically. Because I'd say, I mean, I reckon Liverpool will have at least 60 to 80,000 fans in Madrid.
Yeah.
I really do. And I know there's, like, you know, loads of sort of ticketing issues around that. But as an expression of just how big a football club Liverpool is, possibly the biggest, arguably the biggest.
The point is,
we get the chance to show that to another club who might think that they're in that position themselves.
So my original poorly articulated point was exactly what you've just said, but I know we can get misty-eyed about it, and I agree with what Dan was saying about, you know, rallying after the final whistle last year. And I don't know whether it's a coping mechanism, Mel, but I can't imagine what it was like in the press box, but like whether it's a self-defence mechanism. As soon as the final whistle went, I'd almost written in my head, right, this is going to be part of something. This is going to happen for a reason. And the lessons we learned tonight, we're going to get something out of it. We're in defeat, we're crestfallen, but we're going to take that. And everyone thought Liverpool had fought a bit in the next season. There was a narrative there, and it's gone now because Liverpool have been so great that, oh, well, how are Liverpool going to recover from that? And I think we've just proven to everyone. I think that's involved with the pride element as well, in some ways, we've been kicked as hard in the bollocks as you could do in the manner in which we lost, and yet we're back again.
Yeah, I think one of the helpful things for me, even before Shevchenko Park, honestly, genuinely, was the best experience, football-related experience I've had. I didn't know anything like it. And since then, I've felt that that has carried through the entire season. Every European game I've gone to, every away game, you've sensed that just spill over. But even before Shevchenko Park, I'd done that from Hong Kong to Kiev, how Liverpool dealt with pre-season, the Coutinho situation, all the way through to planning for life after the final. I'd known from the January, Liverpool had already started their transfer work and most of it was pretty much done. So in my head, I knew that whatever happened in that game, Liverpool would be okay after the final whistle. But then other than that, I knew that after the game, the players were watching all the footage. They were watching the fans at Shevchenko Park and stuff, you know, all the videos that were on Twitter, YouTube, as a sort of thing of, my God, this is who we play for. These are the people we represent. Look at them. We cannot be on the floor. We have to go again as well. So that disappointment that everyone felt, and you know, even from doing the piece from the tears in Kiev to how Liverpool became title contenders, Jürgen's feeling was about, you know, Ox being injured and missing out on playing in that. And, you know, now he's got to go through this long rehabilitation period. Mo Salah with his World Cup in jeopardy, such a great season, at ending that way. That was his disappointment. But the players, you know, in those moments, they're all feeling heartbroken for themselves, for their families, for the fans and all that. But them seeing that sort of footage lifted them. Fuad, do you think, you know, all the stuff that we saw last season in terms of the fans and how the fans helped the players through, we spoke about the game against Roma at Anfield, the games against City. Do you think this season as well, they've looked at all that and thought, you know, with the Barcelona game most especially, well, why can't we do it when we've got them behind us?
Yeah, exactly. I think that Barcelona game, I think the strength and belief in within the squad and in the fans was already there. But when you have a night like that, I sort of thought to myself afterwards, you know, you watch Fabinho stood there kind of singing, "You'll Never Walk Alone." He's been at the club for a few months. And I was sort of thinking, taking my kind of emotion out of it, if you're one of those players, how could you ever play for another club if you've experienced something like that? Because, you know, there's nowhere else in the world where something like that can happen. And I think, you know, you can look at managers' post-match kind of interviews and things, and you know, sometimes they're not exactly, you know, they're very much kind of giving out a media kind of line. But I think Jürgen was so honest, and his kind of shock and his kind of numbness was really interesting, because I think he realized himself that he's accomplished so much more than he thought he could have off the pitch in the time he's been there. And I think that's something that, you know, he might not necessarily have thought of being as kind of as possible when he first came in. But, you know, you've seen videos of him watching the footage, like you said, of Shevchenko Park and places. And you know, the whole thing of creating the belief off the pitch, because at the end of the day, it's something that the players want us to enjoy. The manager has always said that he wants us to come in and have a good time. You know, he talked about a football party before that game and to show an appreciation and just have a great night. So, yeah, I think the players now are at that stage where they're not bogged down by the weight of expectation. I think in the past you've seen players who aren't quite at the level and don't have the self-belief struggle with the kind of pressure of representing us, representing the fans. And these guys, I think, are so sure in themselves that they're able to embrace that responsibility and use it for kind of positive rather than a thing weighing them down.
Well, there's a really, really good interview with Virgil van Dijk where he references that, and he also references the crowd thing as well. He likens it to Celtic, and I don't know if you've read it yet, but if you haven't, and this is just anyone listening to the show, I'd definitely give it a read, because it's an interesting insight into the psyche of Virgil van Dijk, and you think that permeates through the rest of the squad. And what was really interesting, in early in the week, we've done some really good interviews with European Cup winners. I spoke to Craig Johnson, Josh, and John spoke to Kenny Dalglish. And they said they were petrified. It's mad, because, and it surprised me, I mean, like giants of the game, like Kenny saying, you know, in the weeks running up to it, and they referenced 84, because there was a 3-week gap then, which is similar to now. And so we just wanted to play the game.
They went abroad and kicked shit out of each other.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they did. Yeah, They did.
Sat by a pool for 3 weeks,
said,
didn't they?
But they said the nerves were almost overcame them in the horrible way. You've got like, and that's Kenny Dalglish saying that. And now you're Virgil van Dijk going,
nah,
I don't get nervous, I get excited. And you're like, but I think Fuad's absolutely spot on there. He's, you know, players who aren't quite at the mark, and nothing they're going to get found out, but there's that anxiety around it where you've got a behemoth thing going now. Who doesn't get flat? Who doesn't, you know, literally and metaphorically, doesn't flap at anything. I don't want to touch wood, by the way. I'm touching all the wood in the world when I'm saying this. But that payment's right through the side.
I think it's interesting what Fu said about Klopp looking little shell-shocked and shaken by what he'd seen in Barcelona. It was sort of a realisation that the whole thing's actually bigger than him. And he's had a magnificent season. But I think one of his greatest achievements, we may come to see, is I think he's got a team that's sort of bigger than him now in a certain sense, in as much as the sum of their personalities, all the cliches abide here. This is a team of captains. You look at the steeliness of someone like Andy Robertson, and he's young still. But, you know, people go, well, Klopp's lost a lot of finals. Is there a Klopp factor? He's created a team here that's bigger than him, and that will, and a lot of people, he's brought in these players for this reason. People like Van Dijk, they're not interested in the burden of Liverpool's 29 years without the title. They're not interested in whether Jürgen's got a bad record in cup finals in recent times. They're just winners, really, really composed winners, I think, and I think this is going to make a difference.
He's created a way in which these players see things in a different light to others as a collective. And I think what's really interesting is that I've looked at this team throughout the last couple of years, and it's clear to me they are solely focused on taking responsibility for the things they can control, and they are fully aware of what they can't control. So if you use the final, for example, you know, if we are to get a really bad decision in the game, or, you know, touch wood, it doesn't happen, but we're struck down with injuries early on, they know they have no control over that. They are looking at what they can control all the time and shaping their own destiny. And I think a really good example of that is something like Fulham away this season, where that equaliser for Fulham would have ruined Liverpool teams in the past. They'd have gone on to lose that game. They'd have gone on to feel sorry for themselves. It probably would have put them in a slump for the next five or so. This Liverpool team looked at that and said, OK, we've got, 15 minutes or so left. What can we control? What we can go and win this game? And just put that to bed. And Van Dijk was central to that. You know, it was his mistake, and he just brushed it off. Yeah, it happens. I'm playing football, so what?
I even think you saw that at Wolves on the last day, where they were shaken by that, by the crowd suddenly picking up on what was happening at Brighton, and it took them 15 minutes, but they did reassert themselves in a difficult game.
And I think it's a really good point that there's always been pressure to play for Liverpool Football Club. I think even as fans, sometimes we're guilty of not realising how big this club is.
Mm-hmm.
Klopp talks about this club is mammoth. You know, around the world, next week there will be people all around the globe getting up at ridiculous times and congregating together to watch Liverpool in the European Cup final, because they're huge Liverpool fans as much as anyone here. And that's something that I think, like I say, in our own little Liverpool bubble sometimes we tend to forget about. And that Klopp makes a great, great quote when he first comes in about carrying the history around in a rucksack as if it's weighing you down. And he's found a way to get these players to walk into Melwood every day and to look at the European Cup and go, yeah, sound, that's where we should be. That's what we should be aspiring to, not you know, some shrinking violets that we've seen in the past, which is, you know, I'm not having a go at anyone's, slighting anyone's personality or whatever, or mental strength. I think there are just certain ways in which, Stephen Warnock says in the Provo yesterday, it all comes down to the manager in terms of mentality and the environment he creates. Well, I think we've got the best in the business for that, in my own opinion.
It's the one thing that's really struck me, just going exactly off the back of that, there is a small C conservatism in Liverpool where we, you know, as much as we walk chest out, we don't really talk about how, you know, we kind of worry about things and we don't see things from the outside, and we worry about things in microcosms and all that stuff. But when you read opposition managers' quotes about Liverpool, it was the Bayern Munich manager Kovac in the run up to the Bayern Munich game, and he went, no, these are one of the best sides, if not the best side in Europe at this, and he's not the only one. Valverde, after Barcelona, have just done his 3-0 in Barcelona. Nah, it's not over yet.
Messi's reaction to them not getting the fourth goal told you everything you needed to know about that second.
Well, exactly. Yeah. But Messi's reaction to the free kick, do you know what I mean? He was elated, and then exactly when Dembele misses that, because they just know there's the slightest sniff. Who was it who said yesterday, Liverpool over two legs will kill you? And I know this is only a final, but we are at that top table and haven't been away from it for so long. And I think this ties into the flags thing and the banners and everything we referenced earlier in the show. That takes a while to like settle amongst the fan base. And I think it's finally just settling now where we feel comfortable and walk a little bit chest puffed out a little bit.
I tell you what though, I mean, Istanbul's what, is it 15 years? 14 years ago. You can't underestimate the impact that scoreline on the club's history has in the psyche of every Liverpool team that goes out on the pitch now. Because
look at the FA Cup final.
Because we're famed, exactly, 1 year later, pretty much the same thing. Yeah. And then of late, you know, these incredible comebacks against Dortmund, against Barcelona. I think that's all rooted in Istanbul. I really do. I mean, going back to slightly a lesser point, but when United were dominant, they came back from 3-0 down against Sheffield Wednesday one time around the time that they won the first league title, and then all of a sudden it was in our heads, even if they go 2-0 and then another time they came back from 3-0 down at Spurs and won 5-3. As soon as you start thinking that you can do that, and Liverpool Football Club thinks all of this now, it's a legacy of Istanbul. You know, it was a miracle, but at the same time, it's a believable miracle because it actually happened. And I think that it never goes away. And especially in a European Cup final, you never go up.
I think there's kind of this weird thing with opposition managers, as you're talking about, Andy, where, you know, they're asked to explain after a game what's just happened. You know, you look at Dortmund and PSG earlier this season and, you know, Barcelona. There's sort of an acceptance where they're like, the managers are sort of like, well, they got one goal and we know what happens next. They know that first goal is so important. And I don't think there's another club in the world that a stadium that kind of believes as much after getting that first goal. If you're 3-0 down or you're 2-0 down, 4-0 down, whatever it is, that they can go on and get another. And there's that kind of patience and we know how to pick our moments to drive the players on. And it's something that, you know, you can take for granted because no manager of these sort of teams should be saying that. No one should be saying, well, they got a goal and we all know what happens next.
The players drive that. One of my favourite moments of the season was Jorginho and Wijnaldum wrestling the ball out of the arms of Ter Stegen when he scored the first. It was very similar. It reminds me of Stephen doing this is great for podcast, by the way, but Stephen doing the arms at 3-1 in Milan. It was like, right, okay, fucking game on.
Yeah.
There you go.
The thing I wanted to mention is, even before the kickoff of that second leg against Barcelona, Arsene Wenger was telling anyone who'd listen.
Didn't he say something like, it's the last place that you want to go?
You do not want to go for a return leg to Anfield. You don't want it. But I think he said crazy things happen there. Mm. Things you know are coming, so you try and plan for them, and you cannot control them no matter what you do. I also put down that Virgil van Dijk interview because he says something so interesting in there. Not just that he's not nervous and that everyone's relishing this, but I think he was asked, because the way he answers it means it was directly referenced in the question, how would Liverpool pick themselves up having lost the league by a point to City after getting 97 points and losing the European Cup final for a second successive season? How do you deal with that as a team? And he said, we're not thinking about that. We're thinking about, we have the opportunity again to go and win the European Cup, and that's what we're focusing our energy on. We're going to give everything for that goal. And then he says, and I read that we could, you know, then win the Community Shield, then win the Super Cup. So we're thinking about the trophies we can win, not the inverse of that situation. And he said, we're all confident enough here to know what we're capable of, and even if things don't go our way, what we can continue to do. And I think that mentality really has kind of seeped through the fan base. It's so important that people don't view every single opportunity as fatalistic as the last one, because they've proven to us after Kiev that, hang on, no, this is what we do now. We're going to compete for the title. We're going to be in the conversation at the final stages for the European Cup moving forward. This is who we are now. But, you know, we've got a few minutes to go, and I know loads of Liverpool fans are going to be in Madrid without tickets, but more so, there are people that I know travelling from all over the world to come to the city in anticipation for the parade, but also just to feel close, because they can't afford to go to Madrid, to feel close to what's happening. if you were advising them, because we were speaking about, you know, the banners, the flags, which area should they go to, which roads should they go and check out, you know, to get the feel off these decorations?
I tell them to go and keep Rob company.
Do you know what? I'm still a ticketless fan.
House party at Rob's house.
Yeah. I booked my flights, booked my hotel, and thought, well, the ticket, usually by hook or by crook, I'll get it. I've put the hours in, I've never not got. But this one's off the charts. It's not, I'm now believing it's not going to happen. I did say to myself I'd still watch it in a bar in Madrid, but I'd sort of made my mind up in the last week that, no, I'd rather be in the city. But Mike, you've actually swayed me just partially during the course of this by describing that, I can't make my mind up. Is there a need to be near the actual event?
I take your point. I think
I don't know.
I think it's one of the things when you go to European Cup finals, you've got no sense of what's going on at home, and ridiculously, it's a bit trite to say that you feel a bit jealous that you're missing out on the home experience when you go into the game. But I think if I didn't have a ticket, and I'm lucky enough to have one, I think I'd go because I'd want to be part of that.
The day before the game, the other thing people don't understand, and
I think it's the night before.
It's the
eve of the game. I'd quite like to be with you before. Exactly. We'd be equals for that night only.
I don't know how good your pickpocketing skills are. It's
teach me, mate.
I'm just relating back to KF. The best one, KF, the night before the game was the best. One of the best nights of my life. Yeah. It really was. It was fantastic, and. You know, I'm anticipating that in Madrid. I've got my dad flying in on the morning. I've got my son flying in like midnight the night before. So it's, you know, I'm really looking forward to it. But it's about if you knock around with Liverpool fans, we all know each other. It's like we're all on nodding terms at the very least.
It's the scousest thing ever. Little nod.
Yeah. There's a mate of mine, Jacko, who comes from Crosby. I've been on nodding terms with him for 30 years, and we've recently started speaking. I said, it's mad, isn't it? It's what you're doing.
It stays, it's the nods, then there's the light on, then the...
I said to him, you're going to Madrid, and he came out with one of my favourite phrases, is that a rhetorical question? Of course I am. And Carragher said on the, I think this was on the Wolves commentary, watching that back, he says that, you know, everyone, they're looking forward to Madrid now, this is a big disappointment, and I tell you what, I don't know anyone who's not going.
If we win, don't want to tempt fate here, what time's the parade back in Liverpool? Sunday.
It'd be the Sunday.
Sunday afternoon, yeah.
See, I've got a flight back from Madrid at 3:00, so that's going to be 2:00 English time, isn't it?
Yeah. Just me.
You just landed in the city.
What do you think, Raph? Should we go to Madrid? Nod in the back there.
You know what though? I mean, the one thing on this,
pay for the bloody flights.
One thing I will say, Rob, and I would dearly like you to come to Madrid purely just so we can have a couple of beers on the day of the game and all that stuff. One thing I have found this year, which is mad, is being in the ground is so much easier than watching it on the telly. Yeah. Watching this side, I know I've never experienced that before. There's been it starts with I couldn't go to Man City the second leg last year. And I was nervous as hell.
Oh, that was hell! Yeah. I watched that.
But there's been like Barcelona in the ground. There wasn't any nerves. I know if I was watching that at home, you'd be an absolute bag of shit.
I don't know. At 4-0, I wasn't in a good place in the ground. Steven Gerrard got off.
I don't know. But I'm sure this is across all generations. When you're in a football match, you feel like you've got some kind of control over it with your eyes. I mean,
you just sing
the Barca second leg, right? I man marked Lionel Messi in my head, because every time when a Barca had possession, I was looking, right, where is he? I man marked him. First 45 minutes, I was knackered at half time, absolutely knackered, because I was playing. I was basically playing. I felt that my ability to sort of keep an eye on him was part of the whole business of him not being as effective as he could have been.
And when you're in the ground, just think about now against Barcelona, it's 4-0, the minutes are ticking by, and Barca are coming forwards. You just get off your seat and go, Liverpool. You're just trying to do something. And then around you, people are doing it. So, yeah, to that extent, you do feel you can do something about it. In front of a TV, there's nothing. You're shouting into space.
Okay, but not everyone is going to be lucky enough to get to Madrid. So for those paying to come to Liverpool, any shouts for where they can go to experience?
I think the centre of town, because that's where the most, you know, that's where everyone, you know, flocks to. It's like a, Or, off to a flame, isn't it?
Alternative, and I know it's sold out, so anyone who's lucky enough, but if you can get T is going to be immense because you're right by Anfield. I remember,
right, yeah.
Yeah, Anfield around the ground. If you can get a pub anywhere near, have they got it on in the brick?
I think Concert Square there, to Hanover Street would be wild if Liverpool win.
Town or by Anfield, but Anfield, if they do it, Anfield will be fucking unreal.
This has been the Anfield Wrap. We hope you've enjoyed it. Wherever you are in the world, we hope you will enjoy the European Cup final and the aftermath, because if you're enjoying it, we're enjoying it, Liverpool are enjoying it, and that's the way we want it to be. Sports Social Podcast Network.